This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bussin. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss how to support your respiratory health with nutraceutical formulator Dr. Gordon Chang. We'll find out if intercourse is the goal or merely an option with sex therapist Serena Haynes. We'll learn how to survive, live, and thrive with author Stephen Bryant Langer. And lastly, we'll discover coming trends in chronic pain management with Dr. Samir Parani. Before we get to that, here's your Tonic Quick Shot. A new study highlights a serious and ongoing public health risk, driving after using cannabis. Researchers analyzed 246 drivers in Montgomery County, Ohio, who died in motor vehicle crashes between 2019 and 2024. They found that nearly 42% tested positive for active THC, the chemical in marijuana that causes impairment, with an average level of 30.7 nanograms per milliliter, far above the legal limits in most states, which range from 2 to 5 nanograms per milliliter. The high rate of THC positivity remained steady over 6 years and did not change after Ohio legalized recreational cannabis in 2023, showing that legal status didn't reduce risky behavior. Blood tests taken shortly after death confirmed recent cannabis use rather than past consumption. Lead author Dr. A.P. Eke stressed the need for stronger public messaging, saying people should treat smoking marijuana just as they treat alcohol. Don't smoke and drive, he said. The study underscores that despite legalization, driving under the influence of cannabis remains a major danger, and more public health efforts are needed to prevent fatal crashes caused by impaired drivers. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: the Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Dr. Gordon Chang in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. Shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian-owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000-square-foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com. Omega Alpha's products are created by their scientific team headed by their owner, operator, and CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Dr. Chang holds a PhD in physiology and biomedical engineering from the University of Toronto. He also has 2 years postdoctoral experience in clinical biochemistry, looking at free radicals and antioxidants. He's published over 20 peer-reviewed articles and conference proceedings, and he's a frequent guest on the show. Welcome back, Gordon. How you doing?
Very good, Jamie. Thanks for having me back again on your show.
So I got to tell you, I'm not feeling too great the last little while. Every time, this time of year for me is when my allergies really kick in. I get hay fever, like ragweed is very bad, and it's ragweed season. So I'm hoping you can help us unravel some of the mysteries of respiratory health today. What do you think?
We can try. We will go through some of the key things that people should look at and try to adhere to, and hopefully that helps out. One of the things I say to most people, if allergies are the thing that affects you the most, the best thing you could do, stay indoors, breathe, recycle there because it's filtered, right?
Yeah.
And that prevents a lot of the allergens from coming in. But for most of us, it's very difficult to do, right?
You know, I've got a pup and I got a walker 3 times a day. And you know, frankly, I'm in front of the desk the whole day. For me, getting outside and doing something, like it's intrinsic to my well-being is to get outside. So
I tell everybody, The best time to work for Omega Alpha is during allergy season, because in our production facilities, all the air is HEPA filtered, right? Just because of production standards, right? So if you're working in production during allergy season, the air is filtered, so it gets out a lot of the allergens, right? Or most of the allergens is gone. So your allergies don't bother you, right? That when you're there. But one of the things I say to people who have seasonal allergies also is that it's like the last straw that breaks the camel's back. Let me explain that a bit. I tell everybody I suffer from seasonal allergies myself. In the summertime, I don't have seasonal allergies. I want to get in fall and early spring. So in the summer, I can be out and about, no problem. I can sit in a room filled with cigarette smoke, back in the day when you're allowed to smoke cigarettes inside a restaurant, no problems, right? Come fall, I can't sit in a room filled with cigarette smoke, because what happens is that, I sit for 5 minutes, I have to get out because my eyes are watering, I'm sneezing, the whole nine yards, very uncomfortable, right? So the reason is that is because during the allergy season, one of the things is that your body's been assaulted all over, and then if I add cigarette smoke to the mix, it's the one thing that pushes me over the edge a lot faster. Now, the reason I bring it up like this is that one of the ways we can use to treat some of these allergy symptoms is to do a cleanse, right? And we clean out the liver, and I say one of the things we also do is to clean out the respiratory tract. So we would do something called a lung flush. When I say a cleanse, we're not obviously going in with a scrubbing brush or scrubbing anything up clean. What we're trying to do is to make the body systems handle a lot of these allergens a lot better, and also get rid of all these excess allergens or whatever these allergens produce. Because one of the things about allergens is that it produces a lot of inflammation. It's not the allergens themselves that is bad. It's the body's reaction to these allergens. So if we can get rid of the results of allergens, we can make you feel a lot better. All right, so this is why I talk about doing like a lung flush. And basically, a lung flush is what you're trying to do with that. You're trying to get the system to get rid of a lot of these effects of the allergen. So it makes you a lot more comfortable. You help get rid of some of these inflammation products, byproducts. Again, that helps you feel a lot better, right? One of the things that if you get rid of some of the products of inflammation, one of the things is that you breathe better. So normally during allergy season or this time of the year, you have a lot of phlegm in your throat. Phlegm, believe it or not, is not a bad thing. It's a way of the body trying to protect you from a lot of these allergens. So basically what the phlegm does, the phlegm is produced by your respiratory tract, down the bronchioles, et cetera. And that traps a lot of the allergens to prevent them from getting down further down. And then when you spit the phlegm back out, it's a way of your body getting rid of a lot of these allergens, right? But with the phlegm, it also makes you have a hard time breathing, et cetera. So if you can get rid of some of this phlegm, it's also helpful. So there are herbs that people can use, things like fritillaria. Fritillaria is one of the best herbs that I know of that will get rid of some of the effects of the phlegm, right? Another thing during the allergy season, especially for people who are asthmatic, this is the extreme end. People, their bronchioles will constrict. And when their bronchioles constrict, again, you're going to have problems breathing, shortness of breath, et cetera. So what you try to do, you try to open up your bronchioles. Now, I know for the asthmatics, they use the puffer, all right? They go in, take a puffer, or they do some preventative measures using the puffers. So what the puffer does, it has steroids, some of it, which will make the body less reactive to the allergens. So it maintains the bronchioles and makes it open up. There are certain herbs that are what we call bronchial dilators, which also opens up the bronchioles. And because it opens up the bronchioles, it maintains the patency of the airwaves, meaning that it maintains the airwaves so that they open. So again, makes breathing a lot easier. So if you have something that will get rid of phlegm, maintain bronchial patency, right, you are automatically feeling a lot better.
What are the herbs that do that? What are the ones that help with the bronchioles?
There's a whole slew of them. It's not just one single herb. All right. And a lot of these herbs work by different mechanisms. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the herbs I would probably recommend is fritillaria, mm-hmm. right? Mulberry leaf, honeysuckle, right? Chrysanthemum. And then there's mimotica, even stinging nettle leaf, eucalyptus leaf. Now, after I've mentioned this whole slew of herbs, I know people will say, okay, I'll just go out and just get fritillaria and forget about the rest. The problem with this type of approach is that fritillaria might be great for getting rid of phlegm, but it doesn't help open the bronchioles. So if you just do the fritillaria, you're doing a half the job.
Right.
So the idea is to get a whole... get a blend of all of these into a product and then and use it, right? So getting back to allergies, right? Mm-hmm. There are certain things that people can use to help inhibit the body's reaction to the allergens. One of the better known ones is quercetin.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. But in general, any antioxidant would be helpful for minimizing reactions. And I use the word minimize as opposed to stop, because you know, everybody's degree of response to allergen will vary. You have ones who, once the allergy season starts, they're basically in bed, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have the ones who will have a runny nose and an itchy eye, and that is, they can live with it, right? So it just depends on how bad it is. But one of the things is that with any of these natural remedies is that it will help. Right, so if you're one of those people who have mild allergic reaction and you're just a little bit uncomfortable, taking these over-the-counter type products, you know, with the herbs and also with the quercetin and the different types of antioxidants, will make a huge difference in how you feel. Right, and the ones who are bedbound, again, if you take it, it makes a big difference in the ability to function. The functional ability.
So let's focus in on taking antioxidants to help reduce allergy symptoms.
Yeah.
Can you explain some of the natural products that are antioxidants and how that might help?
Yeah, let me explain how antioxidants help with the response. All of these allergens cause an inflammatory response,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is why antihistamines work well. Antihistamines, all right, the drug ones, focus on histamine. Histamine is one of the things that's produced by white blood cells to cause the inflammation response. But that's only one agent. It's a major part of the group, but it's only one agent. But histamines are also, they work by a free radical mechanism. And anything that works by a free radical mechanism, antioxidants will help control that pathway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, not every single antioxidant will stop every single free radical known to man, right? So what you have to do is to take a wide variety of antioxidants. So it'll be like a shotgun approach, and you take a wide variety of antioxidants basically to help stop whatever free radicals you encounter, right? So for those of us who live in the urban environment, there's a lot of free radicals being generated by the cars going up and down the road. Right,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of free radicals being generated by pollution in general, right? Whereas for those of us who live in a country environment, there's a lot more free radicals being generated by your body in reaction to just the pollen that's floating around. The pollen count in the city is usually a lot less than the pollen count in the country environment, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So the antioxidants basically stop the interaction of free radicals causing the inflammatory response. And this is basically how antioxidants will work.
Okay.
But I'd just like to point out there are many different ways to generate an inflammatory response. Free radicals is just one of.
Right. Okay. So what are some of the antioxidants that you would recommend to help people if they're suffering from allergies?
I would use things like hesperidin. Use things like rutin, use things like quercetin, of course. Those are the few big ones that are known. Even our alpha lipoic acid, all of those things, right, you use. Again, get something that has a wide variety. Because in all fairness to you, I also say to you, by the time I say all these things, by the time you go out and you buy all of these things singly, it gets very expensive.
For sure.
If you get something that has all of it in one pill, life is a lot easier.
Is there anything we can do to prevent allergies? Or the cleansings that you suggested, are those preventative measures? And if so, is there anything else
we can do? I think it's preventative. Remember when I talked about being in a smoke-filled room, et cetera, at the beginning?
Yeah.
Right? What the cleansing does, it lessens the toxic burden on your body, right? So if I start doing the cleansing in the fall, as an example, right?
Yeah.
Yes, my body will still react. However, the toxin burden on my body is less. So my reaction is also going to be less. All right. So my level of being able to deal with some of these toxins also becomes greater.
Okay.
So yeah. So this is how we can help with some of it's a preventative aspect. So doing the lung cleanse is one of the best ways of helping to prevent some of these reactions.
If we drink a lot of water, is that going to help us with some of these?
Well, definitely. Water, exercise also helps, because exercise is a natural way of detoxifying the body. However, the problem with exercise is if you're outside and you have it's allergy season, right?
Yeah.
All you do is exposing yourself to a lot more allergens. And yes, if you go to the gym, right? The gym is usually in an air-conditioned setting, so it filters out a lot of the allergens. So it's a good way of getting some of this exercise in.
My eyes have been really itchy. Is there anything I can do that you would recommend with that?
You know, one of the things is, as I said, if you do the cleanses,
yeah,
if you take the antioxidants like the quercetin and so on, because it's not an all-or-nothing response, it will help with the itchy eyes.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Jim.
We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic. Does your reflection match how you feel, or are stubborn areas holding you back? At Form, Face, and Body, they specialize in restoring your youthful glow and sculpting the body you desire, so your outer appearance reflects your inner vitality. Visit formfacebody.ca and see how they can help you rediscover your confidence. Call 416-447-6176 to schedule your complimentary consultation and reclaim your vitality. Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal, organic or wild-crafted. These oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety including argan, rosehip, or skin lover's blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Serena Haynes is a certified sexologist, sex and intimacy coach, somatic sex educator, and studied clinical sexology. She has a background in psychology and has studied relational counseling. She's also studied relationship counseling through the Gottman Institute. Serena's here to help guide you forward on your journey to sexual expansion, whether it's physical, such as erectile challenges, difficulty with orgasms, or your intimacy with yourself or with your partners. And for more information about Serena, you can always visit serenahaynes.com. Welcome back to the show, Serena. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing really well. October already. I'm excited.
This is my favorite time of year. The air is crisp and fresh, and you get to walk outside, and the heat doesn't beat you down, and the cold doesn't wear you down. It's all good.
Yeah, I agree.
Today, we're going to talk about something interesting we've never covered on the show before. Now, as a North American male, I'm socialized to be competitive and goal-oriented, and that cuts across so many different things. And I think, maybe you'll disagree with me, but I think we're socialized even in our sexual relations to be goal-oriented. And of course, you know, the gold mark standard is intercourse. Like, you know, the notion is perhaps that, you know, you haven't had sex unless you've had intercourse. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that we're in a place where sex means intercourse?
Well, we've been in this place for a really long time, and I'm floored that you just said you've never talked about this before. This is such an important topic and such a big topic, but you know, the default is heteronormative monogamous relationships. That's
Right.
the default we live in North American culture, right? And there are so many people who do not fall into those categories. So penetration is, you know, it's what we consider the default, a goal of sex. But the reality of this is, I mean, we'll get into to the male body in a minute, but the reality is, you know, if you have a vulva, then there's only 20, 18 to 20% of us that will have any sort of climax or orgasm through penetration. Everything else is the clitoral complex and, you know, the outside play and the vulva and everything else that has to do with desire, arousal, and, you know, ultimately I say climax, but it can just be the peak pleasure potential that you have in your sex. It doesn't actually even have to end in orgasm.
Yeah. And I think I would take it a step further. I think we've been socialized to believe that the most sexual pleasure comes from intercourse, where that may not necessarily be true, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, not to get too political on it, but it's very male centric, right? So penetration is the quote ultimate pleasure for a penis, but it doesn't have to be, and not for everybody either, right? But that's what we are socialized to believe. And the male pleasure is what's considered, you know, the epitome of what sex is. And female pleasure has always been a little bit lower on the scale. But if we start to kind of take penetration out of the equation a little bit and bring in a couple of other things, the playing field equals out a little bit, and the more pleasure everybody is actually going to have.
Yeah, I agree with you. As a male, I can tell you a lot of our socialization comes from media slash pornography, right? And what's really interesting is, how shall I put this? The money shot has to be expressed in scene, right? Which has you literally stop the penetration so that we can all, as viewers, witness the act of male orgasm, which doesn't occur necessarily where it's supposed to. If you're procreating or if you're having penetrative sex, it's a great irony, right? Like, we need to see that proof, and then it's cut, end of scene, right? And if you see that repeatedly and enough, you would believe, that that's the hallmark. And I think that's really the problem, isn't it?
Yes, it always amazes me how that money shot and speaking to men about maybe watching porn and what they need to have for that visual. It's funny to me because, you know, the females that I talk to a lot about their pornography or the visuals that they would like, that's not their money shot.
No,
So
of course not.
it's really interesting that it's a male focused, you know, industry, the
Of
pornography.
course.
We're changing now into a little bit more something different. But yeah, that money shot can, you know, again, over and over and over again, you see something, and then over and over and over again, it's reinforced that, you know, the bigger, stronger, harder, faster, longer is the epitome of pleasure for everybody, but it's a lie. It's not the epitome of pleasure for almost anybody, actually, and we're all suffering because of
How do we get beyond the lie? If we care about our partners, we care about their
it.
sexual, their orgasms, you want to please and bring pleasure to who you're with. So how do you get beyond it?
Listen, I work with so many people on this. It's not even funny. The demo that I work with mostly are, you know, 40, 45 plus men coming in saying, you know what, my body's not working the way it used to. The women the same way. My body's not working the way it used to. What else is there? And I just think that if we bring these concepts into even a younger age, you're just going to have such a better longevity of your pleasure potential. So I like to recommend just something that we call very simply a pleasure hunt. Just recognizing that the erogenous zones on your body and your partner's body are not just in the genital area. They're not just, you know, in the breast area and the chest area. They can be anywhere. And if you take some time and have those conversations with your partner and just say, hey, listen, I'd love to have a little pleasure hunt with you today. I'm going to leave my clothes on and we're going to focus completely on your body. And I want you to tell me what feels really good for you, what feels not so great for you, and how we can go forward. I love this because it reframes rejection. There's no rejection in this. It's more of a feedback session.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be silly, you guys. Like, it's not necessarily supposed to be the sexiest. It can be, but if you find that it's a quite a silly moment, that's an okay thing. And it really is just really studying your partner's pleasure points, and for your partner too, to sit back and go, holy cow, I didn't know that the crook of my arm where my elbow is so sensitive. If I close my eyes, that feels really, really great. So redefining what pleasure is in a broad aspect of like what that feels like in our bodies, rather than just that one moment of orgasm that lasts, what, 30 to 40 seconds if we're lucky. Everything else should be considered what sex is. And then the end, we're pretty much done then. We're going to make a sandwich. So let's just kind of elongate the time between first kiss and end goal, kind of take the orgasm out of it completely. And that's where you're going to find the magic.
In your experience, when you're dealing with men and women, can they go to that exercise before they get over the stigma of whether or not the orgasm is the goal?
The idea of that exercise is to get over the stigma of the orgasm being the goal. That's really the point. So you get into it and both parties will still have this idea that, oh, I need to have an orgasm at the end. I need to perform some pleasure. I need to show my partner that I feel this, that, you know, it looks like it does in porn and yada, 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 all of those things. But the idea of this exercise is to do it over and over again, both parties. You know, you take turns, you can do it. It's called one-way touch. And over time, what you start to realize is that, holy cow, we just had 30 minutes of pleasure hunting and we had such a great time. We've bonded. We feel close, we've made memories, we've laughed together, we've, you know, snuggled together, our oxytocin is through the roof, our serotonin feels amazing. We're excited to do this again. And oh, holy cow, none of this included intercourse or penetration. Mind blowing. And then you have a positive feedback to want to do that again. And then during sexy time, when it really isn't just an exercise, then you have this pathway of a habit or pleasure that you say, hey, you know what? We can do this while the lights are off and we're under the covers and we're getting all sexy as well. We can take this time to elongate the pleasure.
For people who can't or simply may not want to have intercourse, and there could be a number of reasons for that. It could be health issues, it could be aging, or it could just be preference. Mm-hmm. What are some other ways of being intimate? You touched on some of it, literally, like that's the erogenous zones. Sorry, that was terrible. But that's good. What else can we do?
So, I mean, I've got a couple of things that I just think are just chef's kiss, but we have forgotten how to make out with each other.
Yeah.
I think the make out is just the most beautiful thing. That make out session of the kissing and the touching up over the clothes with no expectation of what's about to happen. I mean, remember what that felt like when you first kissed or made out with that first new partner, you know, and you're not going to go all the way and there's so much tension and erotic, you know, essence happening between both of you. That, I think, is such a beautiful thing. So we need to do that. Other than that, you know, integrating different toys and aids into your sex life is a really fun way to take the penetration out and to start exploring what pleasure feels like in other parts of our bodies. When I introduce any sort of vibrator, like external vibrator, to male bodies, some people are floored with how much pleasure they can feel, but it's so different that it just takes them a minute to redefine what their sexual pleasure means to them. But I think the makeout session, taking your time, really slowing down for men specifically, if you're in a heterosexual relationship, you know, for men specifically to start learning what it is that their female partners' bodies really need, because a lot of the female partners, we were never taught that it was okay to touch our bodies slowly either. We were taught that our bodies were for male pleasure, were for intercourse. That's what it was for. And we fake it a lot. And so that's another conversation that we can have all to pieces. But I think that knowing that your body is going to change, age, it's not going to work the way that it used to. And guess what? It might not work on Wednesday the way that it worked last Sunday. And that's okay too. We just need to roll with those punches and bring in as many tools in our tool belt as we can to find pleasure rather than, quote, orgasm.
Okay. All this is great, but I'm going to give you a tricky question to end off. And that is, how do we engage in addressing this if this topic has never been raised? Because it can be a bit tricky, particularly if you've been in a long-term relationship and you've never kind of addressed these unspoken things.
Mm-hmm. The conversations that would happen before have to sound less like rejection, right? And more like curiosity. So I want you to think to yourself, I want to be curious. And if your partner comes to you with something that sounds a little out there and all of a sudden you feel that tightness in your belly, like, you know, somebody is telling you off or telling you you've done something wrong, approach it with curiosity. You know, I read this article that said, I listened to Jamie and Serena talk about, have you ever thought, or do you even know what a pleasure hunt is? You know, I listened to this podcast. You know what I really loved, honey? I loved last week, just before we had sex, when we were making out so much. Can we make out like that even longer next time? That really turned me on, seeing your, you know, talking this way to our partners, rather than it having to be so sterile. Right? People think their conversations have to be, okay, so for the last 20 years, I haven't felt any pleasure and I would right. like to, no, we don't have to talk that way.
Yeah.
A whole lot of, I loved it when you, I love seeing you when you touched me here, it felt. Things like that are really going to be what gets your partner wanting to play with you in these moments. You know, sex is the adult playground, and we kind of forget how to play and we just get into these routines. So I think go into it with playfulness and curiosity and, you know, recognize that there's so much more that we can do.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Of course, anytime. Thank you for having me.
That was Serena Haynes. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss how to survive, live, and thrive on The Tonic. For over 40 years, the Big Carrot has been the community's go-to for fresh, local, and organic goodness. As a worker-owned natural food market, the Big Carrot is all about healthy living, sustainability, and bringing people together. They've got everything you need, from vibrant produce and bulk goodies to natural body care and wellness advice to keep you feeling amazing. And their kitchen and juice bars, serving up deliciousness every single day. Now, as they celebrate 41 incredible years, they're inviting everyone to join the fun. Head to thebigcarrot.ca to discover more, and follow them on Instagram at The Big Carrot for a chance to win big in their anniversary giveaways. Cataracts are the leading cause of vision loss in adults over 50, but the good news is they're highly treatable. At Oakville Laser Eye Center, patients receive advanced laser cataract surgery with personalized surgeon-led care. Using cutting-edge technology and customized treatment plans, their expert team helps patients see clearly again to help them rediscover life's details. Book your consultation today at www.oakvillelaser.ca or call 905-337-3736.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Stephen Bryant Langer has over 30 years' experience as an executive coach and leadership expert, guiding top executives and leaders worldwide to reach their full potential. He's the founder of the Personal Business Plan, the new standard in executive coaching, and through his executive coaching program, he has transformed the lives of hundreds of high-level executives using his unique 10-step system for personal and professional development. His latest book, The Existential Playbook, How to Survive, Live, and Thrive, is now available. Welcome back to the show, Stephen. How are you?
Thank you very much, Jamie. I'm fine and thrilled to be back.
Excellent. So survive, live, and thrive. If ever there was a time that we needed to learn how to survive, live, and thrive, it might be today, October, and you know what, everything that's going on in the world. Exactly,
uncertainty is here, right?
So let's help us, Stephen. Like I understand how you're trying to approach this is to try and look at the way we exist holistically, and yes. I think, you know, so many of us, when we have problems, we tend to just focus on what we perceive the problem to be, right? We kind of dig into the problem and we ignore all the other aspects of our life. Why shouldn't we do that? Why should we look at things more holistically?
Well, I think it's always useful to go meta, to look at the overall perspective. When looking at our planet from an astronaut perspective, you sort of get what the astronauts call the overview effect. And when we're, you know, faced with issues or troubles, we tend to panic if we're too stressed. And therefore, there are some constants in our life. And I know, Jamie, that you're very much focused on health and wellness in your program. So let me relate to that first, and then we can go in many different directions.
Sure.
I use the acronym FSN, which is fitness, sleep, and nutrition. And therefore, I've sensed and felt and experienced that what I do when I do marathons, for example, the training is completely applicable to daily life also. In order to be resilient, you need to be fit, you need to sleep, and you need to have eaten well. But so, and that we all know, this is not new to any of us. But what is important and the trick is to make it happen. And therefore, I very often recommend solid routines and rituals in your daily life that will, keep you anchored when anything political or worldwide events or crisis or whatever comes up, which you can fall back on. And that gives you this, wall of resilience that you can use. And therefore, if you have built a solid system or a solid structure with routines and rituals, then you're able to, well, not only survive, but also to thrive.
Is it the rituals that bring us out of our focus on the problems? Or is it a little bit more complicated than that? Like, how do we take that step back? Because
It's
everybody's
a
in their
question.
feelings now, you know?
I think it's important to ask for help. Knowing that we're not only omnipotent. Actually, I have in my latest book, The Existential Playbook, I have 10 existential hacks. The first one is reach out, means ask for help. Don't be too proud. Don't think you can do it alone. And therefore, when you meet issues or problems or challenges, then ask somebody to help you. Not only AI, but AI can help also. But don't go into panic. Have a solid approach where you rely on yourself, but also others. And it is this self-confidence that we're able as a human being to prevail. Because we in history, we've always during millennials had issues and troubles and challenges. Nothing is new. It might have different forms, but our own approach to it and our own structure and planning and system and discipline can actually, counterweigh all these issues.
I think a lot of us are in survival mode, right?
Yes.
I think, whether it's professional, whether you're afraid of losing your job, or you're looking at the
Yes.
economy, or you're looking at the state of, what we take for granted, the democracies of the West and how they're
Yes.
being eroded and attacked. How do we switch from survive mode to thrive mode? Like, what are the differences there? Do we need that? Do we need all the grounding before we can talk about thriving?
Nope. I don't know whether, Jamie, you're aware of an American historian and philosopher called Hannah Arendt.
Yeah.
Okay. Hannah Arendt talks about labor, work, and action. And labor is sort of characterized by body work. That is survival, right? It's the ox, it's the work in the fields, etc. But then she talks about another way of putting the mind work and thriving is she calls it action. And that is dialogue and community and ideas and values. And I think it's the way or your intention to have not only body work, but also mind work make you overcome these issues. You look at it as trends or periods or epochs, and therefore you feel more safe. It's not personal. The most important thing I've learned working with business psychologists for, I don't know, 20 years is that we're so competent at addressing, professional issues and projects and tasks. So there we have the task at the center and then the feelings around that. In our private life or also in our, personal all everyday life, we have the feelings in the middle and then the tasks around. And we get paralyzed by that. Our emotions paralyze us. Whereas if we are able to, have it at arm's length, looking at our life, looking at our issues at arm's length, not emotionally involved, then we're able to perform much better. And it might seem abstract, but the switch from looking at it at issues in a personal way or in a professional way is huge. And that can become a habit that you deal with your own life in the same way you would deal with a company or a professional issue.
It's interesting. I think I told you this before. I used to be a lawyer, and essentially lawyers are problem solvers. Whether you're trying, and it may be the problem that you're solving is creating problems for others, but whether you're litigating or whether you're building corporations and businesses and helping people organize, there's a methodology to how you move things forward, and you can't be emotional about it even when you're litigating. So I try and bring that discipline to my personal life. I think where it's really challenging, one of the things you mentioned in terms of thriving is community. I think what is particularly challenging right now is finding meaningful community. Are you finding that, or am I just, maybe this is my little peccadillo?
I agree. And for many years, more than 10 years, I've been, fighting antagonism and the opposites. Let's say I try to work from the middle instead of taking the extreme views, and been a very, let's say, firm believer in the middle and the importance of the middle in order to comprehend what is happening in the world. I think it's Leonardo da Vinci who said that an educated mind is a mind. No, it was Aristotle who said that an educated mind is able to hold two opposing views without agreeing to any of them. So, and this is probably your lawyer approach also. You don't need to agree with either part. You go down, you focus on the facts.
Well,
And
you have to understand everybody's perspective. You don't have to agree with them,
yes.
but you have to understand it. I pine for the middle. I think our middle is being destroyed, and it's everybody is just leaning in to their feelings, which is becoming ever more extreme, and leaning into their right to express these extreme feelings as if that was ever derogated in any way, as an excuse for a lack of civility. I mean, I see it in my personal life. I see it professionally. I don't know what to do. What can we do, Stephen?
And Jamie, when looking at the US, and I won't go into details about this, but looking at, I'm based in Denmark in Europe, and looking at, let's say, the development, I notice one trend which is frightening. And I hear that from many tech people also having relationships in the US with US tech people, that they have difficulties relating in the discussions about what is happening because people are afraid. So even people who are well off and who benefit from the new tax incentives, etc., they are afraid to speak up. And that is new. This the opposite of freedom of expression, it's a tacit knowledge. It's a sort of a well, fright to express yourself. And that has become quite obvious, at least looking from the outside in the American society, in probably only the last months. It's a sort of a new creeping development. And I won't comment anymore because it's difficult to meddle in with local politics. But I see this fear element as something disturbing. And that is where your difficulty of how you expressed it, finding a community, where to speak, where to talk, where to get inspiration, becomes difficult.
I am no shrinking violet, and I'm not going to be cowed by anybody, but I also know I'm an outlier, and I have like I don't mind being in a room with 20 people and disagreeing with 19 of them, but I understand that that isn't necessarily the best way of existing, and so I really do pine for the middle. I wonder where it is. And I wonder why. Like, I think most of us want to exist in the middle. I really do. I think it's fear that drives us to the margins. I mean, we see it as Canadians, right? I mean, we're even closer to it than you are. Yes, they're talking about taking over Greenland, but they're also talking about taking over Canada. It's rhetoric, but it's grounded in some reality. And I don't find it shocking. I find the malaise so shocking. And when I speak to Americans, they actually deny that there's a problem. Smart people. smart yes. people. I've had conversations with them where they think that their democracy is fine. And I said, with all due respect, it is not.
Jamie, that is back to what I said about the fear, or, you know, the dialogues that are not honest. You know, probably in some sort of denial. And it's interesting to observe.
It is, if it weren't so real. It's really hard to just observe. I mean, you know, there's little we can do. I think we just need to be ourselves and continue espousing what we believe. I guess, you know, it's easy for me sitting in Canada to have my opinion. Maybe that will change. I mean, I hope it doesn't, but I'm going to continue. I hope you do too. Would you come back again soon and we can talk about more ways that we can prop up the middle?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's one of my favorite subjects.
Fantastic. That was Stephen Brian Langer. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss chronic pain management on The Tonic. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit omegaalpha.com. Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal. Organic or wildcrafted, these oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety, including argan, rosehip, or Skin Lovers Blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Dr. Zamira Pirani is an interventional pain specialist and the medical director and co-founder of Toronto-based AFIA Spine and Pain Institute. He's also an anesthesiologist with the Scarborough Health Network in Ontario, Canada. Dr. Pirani strives to make a meaningful difference in the lives of all his patients. He's able to treat many different patient conditions from head to toe and aspires to achieve long-lasting pain relief for all his patients. Earlier this year in April, Dr. Pirani opened a second clinic in Hamilton, Ontario. Welcome to the show, Dr. Pirani. How are you?
Thanks, Jamie, for having me, and I appreciate the warm words.
So we're going to talk about chronic pain management, which is always an interesting topic because there's so many different opinions and so much that goes into it. Your team sent me some information which I found surprising, and I'd like to start there, and that is 1 in 5 Canadian adults now lives with chronic pain. What do you think is driving this growing crisis, and why is it becoming such a challenge for both patients and the healthcare system?
So I think this is a very, very complex question, and I want to just go back and say, you know, 1 in 5 Canadians suffer from chronic pain, but as they get older, the incidence increases to 1 in 3. So we know that patients above 65, actually 1 in 3 of them suffer from chronic pain. And so what's driving it? Well, again, that's a very, very complex question as well, because one, we know age is one of the leading factors of chronic pain. And so, you know, you go into your twilight years, you work really hard your whole life, and then you hit 65 and you just start developing pain. So this can be secondary to osteoarthritic conditions such as joint, hip, knee pain, things like that. However, back pain is the most common. So, you know, what's driving it most commonly is age. However, you know, it can happen to anyone. You know, you can have a trivial injury. So I have a patient that, you know, just broke her toe and she developed a complex regional pain syndrome. You can get it from, you know, patients get motor vehicle conditions, and we can't forget about other things, right? Like, so headaches, migraines, things like that. Those are considered pain conditions, and those generally affect young women in their most productive years between 20 and 30 years of age. So it's a very, very complex question. That doesn't really discriminate any specific age groups. I would say that age is the biggest driving factor, but it can happen to anyone at any time.
Okay, so beyond the physical pain, chronic pain has deep emotional and social effects like depression, anxiety, and isolation. Do you see that playing out with your patients? And how important is it to treat both the body and the mind when you're addressing these issues?
So that's a great question, and I really, 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 really make this part of my initial consultation with patients. Pain is a personal sensory experience, and patients, they feel pain in different ways. So some patients have, hyperalgesia, meaning that they, small stimuluses can cause them to have extreme pain. And so every patient's different. And if you're in pain, I always tell patients, if you don't know what pain is until it happens to you. And often pain can take over your life. It can cause a lot of emotional, as you alluded to, a lot of emotional stress. And that's possibly because it can affect relationships. It gives you a low mood because you're always thinking about the pain. You can have job losses, you can have changes in your relationship, you don't have any enjoyment from the things that you normally used to like to do, like going to the Leaf game with your friends or the Blue Jay games because it's the playoffs right now. Those things become difficult, and living day to day and doing your activities of daily living become difficult because that pain is always on your mind. And pain is a protective mechanism, Jamie. So when we're in pain, we're told, we have these sensory fibers, and we're told, we got to stop, something's got to stop, we got to stop this pain. And when pain becomes chronic, so that the definition of that is, greater than 3 months long, that becomes more difficult to treat. So can you imagine yourself, hurting your hand, and that pain continues to become more and more chronic? Well, that pain can go up to your brain, and that can cause something called central sensitization, which can cause a significant amount of emotional distress to many patients.
Why do you think it's important that chronic pain management be specialist-led and image-guided? And what difference does that make for outcomes in your experience?
So, there's a very, very well-established chronic pain fellowship now in Canada. It's the FRCPC, so recognized by the Royal College of Physicians in Canada. Just like, for example, not everyone's familiar with the medical training system, but if you want to become an orthopedic surgeon, you do orthopedic residency. If you want to be a heart surgeon, you do cardiac surgery residency. We have a well-defined program that has all the pillars that brings all the important aspects, the emotional part of chronic pain, the interventional, the pharmacological, and you get this very, very comprehensive training. You're in this very complex training program where, the workforce with all this knowledge. And so pain is very, very complex. I always say one shoe doesn't always fit all, and it requires someone with additional training and additional expertise to really navigate patients through their complex pain journey, to provide them the resources, to give them that expert care. Because yes, I'm an interventional pain specialist, but I also work with people, and I also in my own practice do all the other important aspects of chronic pain that really get the patient better. Those are things like, the pharmacological, getting their confidence back in physiotherapy and movement practices, really resetting their brain signals that have really taken over their life and made it difficult for them to, do their normal activities of daily living. So with anything, you want someone to be an expert as opposed to someone who is not an expert trying to treat your pain. And that's ideal. However, not always possible for a lot of patients because, a lot of people suffer from chronic pain. We said that 1 in 5 Canadians suffer from chronic pain, and up to 1 in 3 when you're over 65. Access to some of these specialists are very, very challenging. Just to further continue with that a little longer, if you do have pain that requires an intervention, let's say, for example, the most common type of pain is back pain, you want to have someone who has interventional knowledge and training in how to get that needle in that exact location where that patient's pain is coming from. And that takes a very rigorous training program to learn how to use X-ray, to learn how to use ultrasound. And, if it was a family member of mine, that's the type of inner pain care I'd like them to have, because I know that has the best evidence and it's the most precise way of treating and targeting someone's pain.
When you're treating somebody in a multidisciplinary way, so the pillars that you alluded to, physical, pharmacological, psychological, etc., okay? Do you have to start with the physical first, or can you, like, how does it work procedurally, or is it different for everybody?
So I'm actually in my pain clinic right now, and I'm seeing a number of patients today, and it always starts with a physical examination. Even before you look at images and MRIs, and, you know, if you look at an image and an MRI, and patients really get, you know, fixated on this stuff, it always says at the bottom, clinical correlation required. So just because it says you have, you know, this herniation at this level or this pathology at this level, it always takes a very, very, very comprehensive physical examination. And part of that physical examination is setting expectations for a patient, right? So, you know, some patients catastrophize. Some patients have a low mood. Some patients, when you see them in person, you realize that they're scared of movement. And we call that kinesophobia. They've been in pain for so long that they're scared to do physiotherapy. They're scared to move. And so all that happens in the physical, in the initial consultation, where we perform a physical examination. We use our words. We set a rapport with the patient, and we do physical examination for the patient. And those are the things that are really, really important when assessing a complex chronic pain condition.
A lot of when we're talking about chronic pain, we're talking about situations where it's impacting your patients, all sorts of aspects of their life. So it may take them out of the workforce, which would lead to financial and emotional stress in addition to the pain itself. What kind of strategies or treatments are helping patients return to work so that they're not feeling these additional stresses?
Right. So that's a great question. And, you know, that goes to, you know, I always say to patient, everything we do is like a synchrony. Everything works together, right? So if you can treat their pathology with an intervention, I always say, you know, 100% pain relief is not necessarily our goal. Our goal is, you know, sometimes I just say to patients, you've been in pain for so long that a pain score of zero is unrealistic. How can we help you live with pain where it doesn't even bother you, right? And so, you know, I always talk about the four P's with the patient. I set expectations, and there's other things, and the four P's, just, you know, to go over them, are the pharmacological aspects, the physiotherapy and movement aspects, the procedural aspects, and then the psychological aspects. One of the things that I'm very, very, very proud of is we've been able to create pain classes which are covered by OHIP, which is how we see patients in Ontario, where we have group pain classes where patients suffering with pain can get confidence because they are with other patients who suffer with pain and they hear their stories. The mindfulness, the meditation, the calming the brain down. I always say to patients, everything I do, if I put all this stuff together, it's really, you know, your nervous system is firing at a very, very, very rapid rate. And everything I do, whether I give you a tablet, whether I give you, you know, a prescription for exercise, that's to really calm your nervous system down. And when we put them all together, it really works like a synchrony. And the most important thing is to really develop a rapport with the patient and really encourage them that, you know, they can live a normal quality of life. And one thing that I didn't include, and as I mature as a pain physician and see more and more patients, and I learn from patients, and even in myself as someone who's getting older, is really the diet, right? So there's really, 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 you got to advocate for patients. And sometimes, you know, they're in pain, they don't advocate for themselves as well as much as they used to. And so really that you have to advocate for them and you have to encourage them. So that I find really, really gets them back to work. It gives them their confidence. They have a physician and a team that's behind them that will support them along the way.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks. It was really fun, Jamie.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Dr. Gordon Chang, Serena Haynes, Stephen Bryant Langer, and Dr. Samir Arani. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to The Tonic Newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic Newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contests, prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you know you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.